When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Thursday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Coming up on the show, the NBA draft is now in the books. We will look at that, get ready for the week ahead in the Canadian Football League, and continue to get ready for UFC 303 going down this weekend. So, should be a whole lot of fun. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Let's get to the basketball. All right, the NBA draft is now behind us, and not going to do a lot of in-depth draft talk here, but there were some big things that came out of it, and the first actually happened a bit before, and that's the New York Knicks making a gigantic move, as they have agreed to a deal to acquire Mikal Bridges from the Brooklyn Nets in exchange for Bojan Bogdanovic, 5 first-round picks, a pick swap, a second-rounder, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. Now, there's still a few things that need to be ironed out to make this officially official, but when it does happen, this makes the New York Knicks an absolute powerhouse in the NBA, not just in the Eastern Conference, but in the NBA. I'm not saying that they rocket up to the top of the league in terms of being the number one contenders, but they're at the adults table now. This is a roster that is legitimately pretty scary. You look at what they are able to roll out there, and they could close, they could do a whole lot of different things, honestly. But you could run, at least to start, with Brunson, OG, who they signed to a gigantic deal. Bridges, Randall, and Robinson, with Hart, DiVincenzo, and McBride coming off of the bench. Come on. That is a really, really good unit that you can roll out there with. And Robinson has some health issues. They're probably not going to be able to keep Hartenstein around. But this is the exact team that you build when you are coached by Tom Thibodeau. They very clearly have buy-in. They very clearly have a buy-in from the fan base as well. And now you have a group that just fits. And we talked about it during the season and during the postseason as well. You know what a New York Nick is now, right? Like when you see a guy, it's like, oh yeah, that guy's he's a Miami Heat. He fits that culture well. You know what? He'd fit well in Golden State. He'd be a San Antonio Spur. Now we know what a New York Knick really is. And it's such a scary team. When you think about defensively, what they're able to do with OG and Bridges out there at the same time. I'm sure you could roll some lineups out there with Hart as well and just be a switching dynamo. And then offensively, it fits perfectly with what they're trying to do in not taking the ball out of Brunson's hands too much, but still having some other scoring options there when teams kind of swallow him up, or if Brunson's a little bit banged up, or at the times where OG is banged up, and those are going to happen, you can just slide Hart or DiVincenzo in there and still feel very, very comfortable about that situation that's going on. There is a lot that you can, I think, be really excited about from a New York Knicks standpoint. I'm not going to say, well, this team is perfectly constructed to beat the Boston Celtics now, but that's a series I want to see. I want to see it in the Eastern Conference Final. Like, these are, I think, so clearly now the top two teams in the NBA's East, in Boston and in New York. And I think if Mitchell Robinson can stay healthy and be the guy who we saw in the Cleveland series, this is absolutely someone who you feel comfortable with at the five on this team. And with Brunson now definitely being underpaid and probably Bridges as well, you can go out and maybe overpay a little bit for OG Anunoby. And they're able to make this move, and they still have Julius Randle. If they want to, like, if they need to reacquire some draft picks to make another move, or just throw him in to, like, just trade him and make a one-for-one or something along those lines, you still have that chip that you're able to move. But also, it sounds like the team has kind of rallied around Julius Randle. And I think with Randle in the lineup this year, this team is competing with the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Final. So, it's such a good move. And it's a lot of draft picks. And it's if you just look at it as, well, this is Mikal Bridges for 5 first-round picks, a pick swap, and a second-rounder, it's too much. It like that. There is no question about it. Like the player Mikal Bridges probably isn't worth all of that, but he's worth it to the Knicks. That is without a doubt. He is 100%. When you look at what he does to this Knicks team in kind of adjusting what tier that this team is in, it is absolutely 100% worth it for the Knicks to make this move. For the Nets now, they're looking to be bad. That they have made a deal with Houston to be able to get their first round picks back, and basically threatening them, like, hey, we'll be average if you don't give us those picks back. One of the weirder negotiating tactics I have ever heard in sports, but it's pretty hilarious. And it makes sense now for Brooklyn. You're not doing anything with Bridges, so why bother? They get Claxton at a pretty good deal. I'm not saying that's the centerpiece of their franchise now or anything like that, but this is very clearly a team that is starting over. And they are starting over with a lot of Phoenix picks from a deal for Kevin Durant. They now have their own picks as well, and a shitload of them from the Knicks. So if they do happen to hit on a couple of draft picks and want to make some moves, they have a lot of draft capital to do that with now. But it just makes all the sense in the world now for Brooklyn. The counterpunch now is going to be interesting from teams around the league. I don't think the Celtics need to do a whole lot. They are still the top team in the league, and I don't think Denver is making moves now to adjust to this or anything like that. But you look at the rest of the East, Cleveland gets the hell beat out of them by this team. And they probably still have a move that they need to make with one of their guards. If they're keeping Mitchell, then they probably need to move Garland. When you look at Milwaukee, what kind of counterpunch do they have? When the three guys are healthy, Lillard, Middleton, and Giannis, that's a really good team, and one that would give this group a bit of an issue, but one that this group is better than. So what do you do there? Philadelphia, you have Embiid, you have Maxey, pretty good start. You have a ton of cap space. Does Paul George make them better than this team? I don't know. It makes them different. It makes them a challenge. It would be interesting, but you're not 100% above this team. The Knicks have now moved their way into being one of the measuring sticks in not only the Eastern Conference, but in the entire NBA. And I never thought that would happen. Shifting gears, the Toronto Raptors, a team who I focus on, you see the Kawhi Leonard poster in the back, they have made a move acquiring Davion Mitchell, Sasha Vezenkov, twice I've screwed that up today, and the number 45 pick in the 2024 NBA draft in exchange for Jalen McDaniels. And I love this move for the Toronto Raptors. I think the star in the middle of it is Davion Mitchell. I think that this is a really intriguing player, and one that, like, when the Raptors were in their spot drafting in the Scottie Barnes draft, he was one where I was like, you know what? This guy could make some sense. And the Raptors end up winning the draft lottery, and so up they go. And obviously Davion Mitchell isn't in that spot, but he was a player that you kind of always looked at like, hey, maybe there's something there with that guy. And he hasn't got the playing time in Sacramento. That's not going to be an issue in Toronto, so it makes sense. And for Vezenkov, this season, he, let's see, 5.4 points per game, so he was not lighting it up in 42 games. He is 6'9", 225, former second-round pick out of Cyprus. The interesting part is he shoots 37.5% from three. If you can bump that up a little bit more and give him a bit more playing time, then maybe you have found another three-point option off of your bench as well. And for the Raptors, like, Jalen McDaniels was not a part of the plan anyway, and quite frankly, might have been waived in a couple of weeks if this trade doesn't actually go down. So the Raptors have a ton of cap space, they weaponize it, and they bring in a young player that you can get excited about, maybe a project, and the 45th overall pick, which is, we'll talk about second round picks in a second here, but it's not nothing. It's a guy that you can bring in and maybe give a look to. So for the Raptors, I'm not going to pretend to know a whole lot about the college kids who they have brought in, but I like Davion Mitchell's game. I think he's going to be an interesting fit in what they want to do in this offense, and we'll see what Vezenkov can really bring to this Raptors team. But it's moves like this that are going to get, I'm not going to say we're going to remember this trade when they are on another parade or anything like that, but it's moves like this that you try when you are a rebuilding team and looking to looking to try to get back into contention here and build around a team that right now really only has a couple of guys. You take a couple of shots. You can bring in some money, and if it doesn't work out, it's just money for billion-dollar teams. And then the last one here is Bronny James drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers. And look, LeBron is cheesy. At times, he can be annoying. Everything, every single movement, every single gesture, every single everything is calculated. At least that's what it feels like. But this is still really cool. You know, like, and I get Bronny wouldn't be drafted if he was basically any other human being on earth. A 6'1" guard who hasn't really developed a jump shot, coming off of a very terrifying cardiac event, 13, 14 months ago? That guy's probably not getting drafted. The guy's definitely not getting drafted if he's not LeBron James's son. But this is still really cool. You know, like, when you strip some of the ick of LeBron away from all of this, this is still a human being and a man who gets to live a dream that no one else in the history of the NBA has ever been able to do, and that is to play alongside his son. And for Bronny James, he now gets his opportunity in the National Basketball Association. And look, maybe he was destined for this anyway. He is going to be a developmental project. He is going to need some work. I'm interested to see how that work goes when your dad is the captain on this team. It's a nice moment, and it's a cool story. And I think anything beyond that is overanalyzing a second-round pick to death and is, like, maybe looking for ways that LeBron is a little cringe. And he is cringe in so many ways, but this is just, from a human standpoint, just a genuinely cool thing to have happened. And, like, at the end of the day, it's a second-round pick. And it is the 55th overall pick in this draft. The Lakers, in the last 10 years, have had 5 second-round picks total, and 4 second-round picks actually play basketball in the NBA. So this isn't, like, it's a neat story. That's all it has to be. This doesn't need to be an indictment on how the Lakers are run. This doesn't need to be an indictment on LeBron. It can just be something cool and neat that is happening, and that's what we're seeing here. And I thought Woj had a great take on it, where it's like, we're talking about nepotism now. You look at ownership, you look at front offices, you look at coaching, you look on down the line. But this one is where we draw the line with a second round pick. Happens in hockey all the time, the 7th round. Like, oh, well, they drafted Marty Brodeur's son in the 7th round. Isn't that cool? Look at that. They drafted David Poyle's great, great, great grandchild. Isn't that adorable? It happens. You have these sorts of draft picks in baseball all the time. Now there's 28 rounds there. But like the second round generally doesn't amount to a whole lot in the NBA. So if you want to take a pick on something that's just nice, then take a pick on something that's just nice. All right, let's shift now to the Canadian Football League. It is once again time for our power rankings.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
All right, CFL Power Rankings going into week 4. We're not going to have a Thursday night preview like we normally do because the game started by the time we're recording this. Getting this to you a little bit late today, so apologies for that. But coming in at number 9, it is the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I view this Ticats team as one that has an opportunity to come out of the hole that they are in, but 0-2, just lost bad in their last one, and not a team that I had high hopes for anyway. Now, a team that I have been impressed by in ways that I wasn't anticipating at various points in this season. And one that I do think can come out of this. I was on the CFL this week on the Ticats Audio Network. So for those of you who are watching this after that, sorry. But I did say, like, of the 0-3 teams, Hamilton, I do has the opportunity to make the biggest impact and have the has the best opportunity to turn this thing around. And I genuinely believe that. But these are based off of what we have seen so far. And what we have seen is, I think, the ninth best team in the Canadian Football League. At 8, it's Winnipeg. And I do think that Winnipeg has the opportunity to come out of this with Zach Calero starting to look a little bit better. No Schoen is going to hurt them quite a bit. This defense needs to get things figured out. But the biggest concern in Winnipeg is they can't block a thing right now. And so Zach Caleros is trying to find his way through these games while also having a whole bunch of pressure in his face. And I made the point on the CFL this week. I just find it weird where they're going, well, yeah, Zach Caleros, he's really struggling finding a rhythm. Anyway, he's lined up in the slot and here comes Strevler. Like, I get you have this fun toy and you have this weapon that can be really, really dangerous. And I'm not saying that Strevler is the reason that Caleros sucks this year. A lot of that is on Calero so far, but it's not helping get this guy into any sort of the rhythm that you're trying to implement this new thing into your offense. Coming in at number 7, it is Ottawa. And I have said on here a number of times, I thought Ottawa had the best offseason. I think that they are going to grow into a really interesting football team. They got the shit kicked out of them this week by Montreal. And so that was a, oh, moment for me. That was a, okay, you guys are improved, maybe not as much as I thought, as quickly as maybe I thought it was going to be. That was really, really bad from Ottawa and showed that I think there are... Now, that Montreal team, you're not going to hear them for a little bit on these rankings, which means they're a very good football team. But that exposed quite a few holes that this team has to figure out. I don't think you can just go, bad day against a good team, here we go. I think that you have to fundamentally look at how you defend the deep ball, how Drew Brown stares down every receiver he's ever thrown to in the Canadian Football League, and how your team protects the football. I think you really have to look at those things coming off of that loss. Coming in at number 6, it is the Edmonton Elks, who by the time you listen to this, may have pulled off an upset in beating the BC Lions. I bet against it. But Edmonton coming into this game, they have hung with good teams. They have been there at the end and different little things have just ended up costing them. But you build all those together and you still have a winless football team. I do not have faith in Chris Jones to turn this around. I do think it will be someone else at the helm who will give it a try, but there are at least positive things building in Edmonton, and McLeod Bethel-Thompson has been really, really good to start this season. At 5, it's Calgary. They had the bye this week or last week. They come into a matchup now at McMahon Stadium against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and if they want to really firmly establish that, hey, that this is a team you need to take seriously, not only in the West Division, but in the entirety of the Canadian Football League, I think you have to give a look at them. And Jake Mayer needs to be someone who steps up and really, really give a tough time to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers here. I think you have to really... I think Calgary has to come out and really put a stamp on this one if they want that. At 4, it's Saskatchewan coming off of their most convincing win of the season over the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think that they did a good job. They get an early turnover. They get some big plays defensively. The thing that you like about Saskatchewan, they didn't beat themselves with the penalties. The run game gets going a little bit more. You're worried about Harris, but he seems like he is going to be fine. But the defense was able to make a number of big plays to keep them in this. This is a good football team. I just can't put them in this top tier just yet. At 3, it's the BC Lions. A Lions team that is flawed, no doubt. But they have the best player in the league right now in Vernon Adams. He has two, probably three really good weapons that he has to work with. And you have a defense that's still figuring some things out. So I think the offensive line changes they've made have worked for the most part. So I still view this as a top tier team in the Canadian Football League. At 2, it's Toronto. We talk about Edmonton. Just lost a tough one late. Toronto just won a tough one late. That was really good work by Cameron Dukes going out there and once again kind of putting on a show. And you have a three-headed monster that looks really dangerous in that backfield. And the thing with Toronto is I don't think they've really figured out where all the pieces fit defensively yet. They can get to the quarterback, I think, relatively aggressively. And it just, it hasn't really broken through yet. So there is admittedly maybe a bit of projecting on this, although they're still 2-0. But there is, this is a team that I do think has the talent that they can really make a lot of noise again in the East. And at number one, it's Montreal. That was the most dominant performance you will probably see all season in what they did against Ottawa, and the pressure they were able to put on Brown, all of the turnovers, and then Fajardo to Philpott deep all night long just ripped this team apart. So credit Montreal for, again, looking like the best and most complete team in the CFL through 3 weeks. Let's shift gears now and talk a little bit of face punching, as UFC 303 is this weekend. On Monday, we looked at the main event fights and what we're watching for from there. But there are a couple of really interesting fighters on this card. Let's talk about it. All right, UFC 303 this weekend from T-Mobile Arena. It's UFC International Fight Week. In the main event, it is Alex Pereira against Yuri Prochazka. But we have non-main event fighters that I think you should get really excited about. And we got two of them here. This is such a fun fight. It is Ian Machado Gary against Michael Venom Page. Both young, both exciting, exciting prospects. And both do feel like they are on the verge of something. For Gary, this is, I think, a hugely important fight for him. He's come off of back-to-back wins against Neil Magny and Jeff Neal. He hasn't looked like the dominant fighter, I don't believe, in either of them. And he now needs to, I think, put on a really, really good show. And quite frankly, for Gary, this is a fight to make sure that another fighter doesn't pass you in this division. And now we're talking about the prospect-y type ones. Gary, a couple of years ago, felt like he was going to be one of the next ones. And he basically, and the thing that really frustrates you, is he basically tried to be a knockoff Conor McGregor. And, like, you can do that by all means, but, like, there's enough personality and this kid's talented enough that you can just be the first Ian Machado Gary. And, like, he's doing all this braggadocious, like, the McGregor strut and trying to be all of these things. And then he's not putting Neil Magny away when he probably could. And he's getting split decision wins over Jeff Neal. Two very good fighters, but if you're going to be the next Conor McGregor, you kind of kick the shit out of those guys. And you put them away and you move on. He hasn't been able to do that. And so it does feel like the progression with him has stalled a little bit. But make no mistake about it, this is still a very talented fighter. I just don't know if he's MVP. Michael Venom Page coming into this one, he has a ton of hype in the UFC. He wins his UFC debut. If he wins this one, he rockets into, I think, title contention. Probably not getting a title fight. Oh, not probably. Definitely not getting a title fight off of this fight, but he'd be one away. And he, like we talked about, he rockets past Ian Machado Gary in this division, not only in terms of, like, the now, but in terms of, like, the bigger picture of what we view these prospects as. So this is a really, really interesting fight for not only what it means for the now, but this could be something that defines these two fighters in kind of the terms of their hierarchy for years and years and years and years to come. Then you have Meira Bueno Silva taking on Macy Chiasson in the women's bantamweight division. You have a couple top 10 fighters, both very interesting. Bueno Silva saying that she's the best fighter in women's bantamweight right now. And things do feel maybe a little bit wide open. But I think that this is a fascinating, fascinating bout and a really good opportunity, again, to establish yourself in a division that has kind of been a little bit scrambled for a while now. And then a couple of fights that are just fun. Cub Swanson taking on Andre Tucci-Feely, a couple of vets who can just bring it, and a couple of guys who have been around for forever, and if this sport properly paid their fighters, maybe these guys aren't still fighting. And so you hope that they both get the financial compensation that they rightly deserve and that they put on a hell of a show for us coming up on Saturday night. And then it's Andre Arlovsky, who continues to add to his tally for the most fights in the history of the Ultimate Fighting Championship as he fights in, like, 175th, which is only a slight exaggeration. And so it just reminds you of how cool it is that this guy continues to get going after he was fighting back in like 2001. So it's just, it's a great chance to see a legend do his thing in the heavyweight division. All right, that is it for the show. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I've been on Sportsnet 960 The Fan the last couple of days, and I'm going to be back on there coming up on Friday, noon to 2. Check me out on Sportsnet 960 on your AM dial in Calgary, or online, sportsnet.ca/960 for those of you who are tuning into this all around the world. And so that's why there hasn't been as much hockey talk on here, because a lot of that has been moved over there. Also, I did do a Twitch stream, and during that stream, Andrew Mangiapane gets traded. So there's some live reaction on that stream. I will try to get the audio up tonight and try to get the video up as soon as possible as well. So that's where a lot of the hockey talk has lived over the last little bit. Twitch.tv/PrimetimePK and over on Sportsnet 960. Follow me on social media. I am at Primetime Klein, and I will talk to all of you later. I am out. Have a wonderful rest of your day, everybody.